Okay, well, I'm Les Powell. I'm from the Baton Rouge area. Not originally, but that's where I live now. Been doing EMS for a multitude of years, and that's pretty much it.
So, Les, I want to thank you for coming by, because I know you've already told this story to me once before, and it's not an easy story to tell.
No, it's not.
So, thank you in advance for sharing this with us.
Okay. Well, basically, it's kind of personal, but, you know, it's something that kind of it helps you to talk about and share. Basically, sitting at the station one night, and the dispatcher calls and gives us an address, and I look at my partner, and it's like, I recognize that address, and I'm trying to place it, and then I realize, wait a minute, that's City Hall. And it came in as a 911 call that was an unknown emergency. And it was before enhanced 911, so basically what happened was the dispatcher picks up the phone, dials 911, because the dispatcher did not answer 911. 911 was a centralized 911, and the dispatcher tells the 911 operator she needs an ambulance and just hangs up the phone, doesn't give them any details at all. And then I start going to the ambulance to get en route, and the fire department gets on our channel, and one of the firefighters hollers over the radio that they needed us at City Hall now. And so I picked up the radio and asked the guy with the fire department, I said, Curtis, what do you have over there? And he says, just get there now. And that was like, okay, because you know, normally they give you a little more detail than that, just get over there. And then the apparently the 911 dispatcher had called the police dispatcher back, or the 911 operator called the police dispatcher back and got a little more information. And our dispatcher, who used to be a state police dispatcher, so she stayed pretty calm and cool through the whole situation, advised that you're going to have a shooting at that location. And so I asked her, is it going to be officer involved? And there was a big pause. And she comes back and says, sir, they'll advise you what you have when you get there. So that
right,
automatically
yeah,
tells
right
you.
Yeah, right away you know.
You know it's a cop. And, of course, you know some of the cops, some better than others. But, you know, you get there and you realize that it's someone you know. And it's someone you know personally that you were on the volunteer fire department with. And, you know, just a couple of days before, you were on the end of a hose with. And he'd been shot. And it was an accidental shooting. But still in awe, he had been shot. And normally, you know, I'm fairly cool, calm, and collected on the scenes. And I get there and start assessing him. I ask him how he's doing. And he said, Les, it hurts bad. And he was real ashen when I first walked in and looked at him. So I knew it wasn't good. It wasn't a good thing. And a couple of the guys asked, what do you need, Les? And I basically looked up at him. I said, give me a backboard. Let's get him off oxygen. Let's get the F out of here now. And they just kind of paused for a minute because they weren't used to me talking like that. And they just kind of looked at me and they realized that I was serious. We need to go right now. And so we basically packaged him, got him in the ambulance. And about that time, as we're putting him in the ambulance, our backup crew arrived. So one of the other guys jumped in the back of the ambulance with me, and there wasn't there's not a hospital in the little town that this happened in. So we ended up going across the river to what was then our only trauma center, even though that was before trauma center designations. We brought him over to the hospital and got him in the emergency room, and they worked on him for a while and sent him up to surgery, and he stayed in surgery for about 3.5-4 hours. And from what I understand, the ER physician told the parents and the police chief that he should have made it to the, never made it to the emergency room alive, and his pressure never got above 60 the whole time. Stayed in the ICU for about, I guess he lived about 72 hours after the incident, and I was with his parents when they decided to go ahead and take him off life support because they knew he wasn't going to make it, and that was tough also in addition. But you know, it's just a tough thing when it hits that close to home. You know, in a smaller community like that, it's more so than not, you know, the majority of your patients you encounter, you meet them for the first time on the call and you may never see them again in your life. And this just happened to be someone that, you know, I had fought fires with also because he was a volunteer firefighter and was in the police explorers before he got on the police department. And then the guy who owned the gun, you know, he was a friend also. And of course he was a mentor to this guy that accidentally got shot. And so it was a kind of a bad situation all the way around for everybody, you know, but it's one of those things that you do encounter as part of your career.
So when you say that he lived, you know, to make it to the ER, and he was in the hospital for another 72 hours, do you attribute that to a level of care where you're sort of wanting to take care of your own and in such a way that it's above and beyond?
All I can say is he received very, very aggressive treatment. You know, whether mm-hmm. that's above and beyond what you would normally do or not, that's hard to say. Mm-hmm. But we did get very aggressive with this treatment. And I mean, even in the emergency room, they knew we were coming. They knew what we had. And they were very aggressive in the emergency room, too. So whether it's something that is out of the norm, I couldn't say yes or no, but I do know that we did treat him very aggressively. So, I mean, and you do that to your own, and I'm not going to say that I treat the general public any different or he got any special treatment, but he did receive very aggressive treatment.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so, but.
So I know you and I talked yesterday about the fallout with, you know, who owned the gun and that mm-hmm. kind of, but for you personally, how do you deal with the emotions that this kind of a situation brings about? You know, I know there's critical stress mm-hmm. debriefing now. And
that was all, this was all before any of that. And basically, you talk to your peers, and that's how we used to handle things. And that's still really and truly, different people handle situations differently, but for the most part, the way I deal with things is I talk to my peers, you know, and you're always going to second guess yourself. Is there anything else I could have done? You know, and I do a lot of teaching too. And one of the things that I tell folks, you know, you can be as aggressive or, you know, you can do everything that you think of and you can continue to second guess yourself. You know, you're not going to be able to save everybody. It doesn't matter if it's a close friend or not. You know, you just do your best on every call and that's all they can ask for, you know. And it kind of brings me back to a quote that I heard Dr. Red Duke said one time that, in EMS, we don't save lives. It says God does. We just entertain them until God makes up his mind. So, you know, that kind of sticks with me. We do our best, and that's all we can. And, you know, in the end, it's in God's hands. You know, I mean, we can only do so much. So, and it doesn't matter how much training you have. A thoracic surgeon or a trauma surgeon, which they didn't have back then yet, but, you know, could be standing there, and he may not have been able to do anything, depending on the extent of injuries, you know. So, you know, you're not going to save everybody. That's the basic I guess, moral to this story is, I don't care how hard you try or how close you are, you know, if it's a family member or friend, you're not going to save everybody. You're going to try your damnedest, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know when we talk about memorable calls, this is obviously one that's going to live with you forever. And I know this was not an easy thing for you to share. So is there any sort of last remarks you'd want to say in memory of your friend?
Well, I mean, you want to live every day like there's no tomorrow, I guess is the best way to put it, because tomorrow is never guaranteed. I don't care who you are. I mean, the three of us sitting here, something can happen to us, you know, in the morning, or, you know, leaving the convention center today, something can happen. You know, tomorrow's not a guarantee. So you have to live your life right and do the right things, you know, because tomorrow may be too late.
Well, thanks so much, Les.
Thank you all.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.